It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 31st of August 2013. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua. On Saturday the 31st of August, David Basham talked to Christina Patterson about the Mothers Helpers Trust, who assist mothers with postnatal depression. He spoke to Amelia Lawley and Lisa Smith about an upcoming suicide prevention training. And he talked to John Newson about setting up a community shed.
Right now, coming to sit down in front of that microphone is a Christina. So it is time for you, Christina, to talk about the trust that you are CEO and founder of.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me on. CEO is a bit of a grandiose title, mainly just coordinating it. I need to change that title, I think. It's probably good for funding, really. Mothers Helpers, I set up a couple of years ago. I experienced postnatal depression with my son, and it was a really hard time for me. I mean, my background is I'm a registered nurse, and my background is that I have done lots of education, lots of community nursing, etc. So when I experienced postnatal depression, I noticed a lot of gaps. I mean, there just wasn't support out there. And I guess one of the things that actually saved me was actually helping other people. So I started the charity, and it really evolved. At this moment in time, we're launching a service on Waiheke Island. Basically, at the moment, we know that 15% of mothers experience postnatal depression. However, I think that's really probably, there's probably a lot of mothers out there who don't get the help that they need. They're not diagnosed. They've got nothing to compare it, their experience to, so they think that it is normal. So I would imagine that the statistics are higher. I think that we know also, and it's not researched well, that fathers experience, 10% of fathers experience it as well. And yeah, I know, it's quite a surprise because they're pretty much neglected in the whole process. Partner depression is very common in fathers who have a partner with postnatal depression. So it's a real issue. At the moment, there's no one working to prevent postnatal depression, even though we know what the risk factors are. No one is doing work in that area. At the moment, in order to meet the criteria for maternal mental health, you have to have severe postnatal depression. So the mild to moderate postnatal depression, the expectation is that it's managed by GPs, but there's no one who's got the expectation that they pick up postnatal depression or antenatal depression in a mother. So midwives, there's no expectation that they necessarily do it. So it's hit and miss. If you have a good midwife, she will assess you for it, and she will send you to, you know, suggest you go to your GP. If you have a good Plunket nurse, same thing happens, but it is hit and miss. There's no expectation. There's no one with that particular role. And then when they see their GP again, it's hit and miss as to whether they get a good GP. These days, at best, mothers are put on medication. Sometimes they are suggested that they go to counselling. But we know that the best way to treat mental illness is a holistic way of treating it. So it may be that a mother goes on to medication, but she actually doesn't become well in the end, because we know that medication alone will not work. And there's a whole heap of consequences of what can happen for a mother who goes you know, who is not picked up, for a mother who is not treated properly, it has a huge effect on her. It has a huge effect on her family.
Yeah, it's no secret to people that I actually work in mental health, and that I have suffered from depression and anxiety for most of my life. So I'm pretty au fait with that male side of it. The research that I see says somewhere between 10 and 15%, and that's a very low estimate, they say.
Mm.
So it could be really high.
Yeah.
Well, what are the kind of things that somebody may experience?
When they have depression?
Mm, when they have postnatal depression.
Postnatal depression. Well, postnatal depression, first of all, there's a difference between the baby blues and postnatal depression. I mean, my midwife said to me, if you're crying, because I was crying every day. I started crying on day three, and by day seven, I was still crying my eyes out every day. And she said to me, if you're still crying by day seven, we're going to send you off to the doctor. By day seven, I made myself stop crying because I didn't want my mind. I mean, even when you've had a baby, you're sleep deprived, you're overwhelmed, there's so much going on. So even without postnatal depression and your hormones going crazy, which is what causes the baby blues, even without that, your mind's not really particularly rational. In my case, it wasn't. I think some mothers are probably were more rational than me. But having postnatal depression, I reasoned in my mind, and I have no idea why, that if I made myself stop crying, then I wouldn't have postnatal depression. And I did that. So I actually didn't get help until 9 months later. So I had untreated postnatal depression for 9 months. And my experience is different to other mothers. Some mothers do not have tearfulness. It's very common to have very, very poor energy. And that was what made me go to the doctor in the end, because I literally found it hard getting off the couch. I was just so tired. And my baby was sleeping by that stage, and I was sleeping okay. But I was exhausted, and I've had glandular fever with a little toddler before, and seriously, it's nothing on what I had with depression. It was just, I was exhausted. I just basically put all my energy into caring for my little boy. I had no energy left for me. So being motivated to clean the house or being motivated to have a shower or any of that was really hard. I felt... I had a lot of negative thoughts. Probably my self-esteem was pretty poor. A lot of people with postnatal depression have trouble sleeping. They have a lot of anxiety. I felt totally overwhelmed with my role as a mother. And I used to beg my husband to come home and help, because I just... having the whole day with a newborn baby. And I mean, I have to say that I've been a pediatric nurse, I've been a nanny for years and years and years, so it's really weird for me to feel like that, and it wasn't natural for me to feel overwhelmed. I'd looked after babies all day before, so it was the depression causing that anxiety.
Yeah, it must be quite a shock to have the expertise that you'd built up all over the years, but all of a sudden it doesn't work for you. And I mean, I've experienced that too, that I know stuff, but it doesn't necessarily work. And the other thing that's always really concerned me is it's supposed to be such a joyous time. You've got this new baby and everyone's going, isn't it lovely? Isn't it wonderful? And yet you're feeling absolutely ghastly.
It's so disappointing.
A dichotomy of the whole thing.
And I mean, to be fair, when you're sleep deprived, you just can't really enjoy. It's really hard to enjoy your baby when you're sleep deprived, and all mothers are. It's a total shock becoming a mother for some than others. You know, we all experience motherhood differently, but most of us will agree the sleep deprivation is awful. And the first time you become a mother is a shock.
And then, of course, your husband's at work.
Yeah.
And you're ringing him up and wanting him to come home.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand what's going on for you, probably.
Yeah.
And he's trying to do what he's doing because that's what he knows he has to do.
Yeah.
I've got to provide for a wife and a baby.
Yeah.
Now we've got one income.
Mm.
It must be hell to have all that pushing and pulling going on for everybody.
Yeah, it is. And, it's hard for it is a challenge for the family anyway. Having a child is – it's a strain on the relationship. It's hard for everybody. But throwing postnatal depression into the mix, it's really tough. And a lot of marriages, and mine did, a lot of marriages broke down. And that was not the only reason for the breakdown, but it certainly contributed. One of the things, another symptom I had was irritability. So it's really, really common for mums with postnatal depression to feel angry. To feel really, really angry, and it puts a strain on every relationship that they have. So it's actually hard for people to get close to them to help them because they're kind of prickly and hard to deal with. Now, I'm not saying everyone, again, not everyone's like that, but for some mums, that's their experience.
Yeah, it's like someone asking me, what's depression? Well, it just is so different for so many people.
Is,
but,
yeah.
There's still, probably doesn't exist now, but when I was young, it's like mothers just what they did. And
yeah.
And it must become as an awful surprise that maybe it doesn't feel like that.
I think a lot of mums feel guilty because their own mother, my mother had four children. I've got one. Yeah, and I sort of see her looking at me like, what's the problem? and it's really, I don't know. I find that one hard to, because a lot of mums have that experience. Their own mother seemed to cope really well, et cetera, et cetera. And we all feel guilty about that. We all think, oh, we're so, and that's part of the depression as well, thinking of ourselves as a useless mother and beating ourselves up for not doing it better or not enjoying it more or whatever the case may be.
And all of that's making it worse. It's not helping
it
in the slightest.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. And so it's actually, I think, really, times have changed. We're lucky to be in Waiheke that we do have a close-knit community to a degree. But, when you've got depression, you withdraw. And like I said, it strains your relationships, et cetera. So if you are irritable and angry and all of that, and you're withdrawn. And I think, times are different. Our parents would let us go out and play from 10 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock at night and not really exactly know where we were. And we don't parent like that anymore.
Oh, when I was a child on Waiheke, my nephew, who's only a year younger than me, we used to leave home at breakfast time. And we'd wander all around Waiheke all day.
Yeah.
We'd go and see Auntie this and Auntie that, and we knew the best place to get scones and things. You wouldn't do that now.
No, it's very different. So the expectations on parents, I think, are very different. Yeah.
Yeah, the parent is really somebody who has to get everything organised all day.
Mm.
Whereas we organised ourselves because it was a safe time.
Yeah.
They
came back for lunch, came back for dinner.
Oh, we didn't even come back for lunch. We would. Auntie Minnie made the best. My Auntie Minnie, bless her. Still going in her 90s, she made the best scones. She made those lemonade scones that are famous on the island.
Oh, yeah, they're brilliant.
And also mussel fritters. And we knew where to go. We had another uncle that we knew. He had the most beautiful King Edward sardine sandwiches for lunch. So we knew where to go.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's really good memories, too, for us as children. But, yeah, it's just a different day and age now, different generation.
So I had a look at the website. The website is mothershelpers.co.nz. Yeah, right. And that's a really good site.
Mm.
I liked the myths about going to the doctor.
Right.
I think, and taking medication.
Yeah.
Because these days, a combination of medication and therapy, and doctors seem to offer that now, in my experience, that, mind you, you can get a certain number of therapy sessions now through the GP. he will give it, because you're right. What you said, and I'm talking from a mental health perspective.
Yes.
The mild to moderate depression. I remember I being told, "Oh, you're just the worried well." You know, I felt like hitting them. It didn't feel like I was the worried well.
I was told I was an over anxious mother.
Well, all mothers would be anxious. Yeah, you hold a little baby any time. We've had a little baby in the family, and I felt anxious when I was holding it. You don't want to drop the baby or do anything wrong. I mean, what would you expect?
What I felt with that statement was that is to go back and say to them, if you find me over anxious, perhaps there's a problem here that you need to respond to.
Yep.
If you have an over anxious mother, let's test for depression, which I have to say I was never tested for depression.
Really?
I actually had I took my midwife, I had two midwives, because the day that I left hospital, I requested a new one. I took my midwife to the Health and Disability Commissioner. She got a slap on the wrist. I knew that in the back of my irrational mind, I knew that I was at risk for postnatal depression. I had all the risk factors. My marriage broke up at some stage during pregnancy. So I was a single mum at that stage. I had relationship difficulties. I was made redundant. When I got back from my honeymoon, I was made redundant, and then I found out I was pregnant.
Oh, and you were fine.
And so I literally, had all these other things going on as well, which I won't go into, but, I had a lot of risk factors. I'd experienced depression. I had a genetic influence. I basically told my midwife, I'm worried that I'll get postnatal depression. By my third trimester, I was asking her to refer me to maternal mental health. She promised me she would. She never actually referred me. And on the day, she was terrible during my birth, and then on the day that, when I got shifted off to Waitakere Hospital, she decided that she was no longer going to do my postnatal care, so she ditched me. So she was pretty terrible. There's a bigger story to that, but what I'm saying is that, and the midwife that I ended up getting, she was okay, but she gave me an Edinburgh score, which is a Edinburgh test, which is what they use to test for postnatal depression. She gave it to me, but she never picked it up and looked at it. So I filled it out, and nobody looked at that.
They gave it to you to fill out,
yeah,
and they didn't look at it.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah. So this comes back to, there's no system in place where that midwife has to give me a test and has to pick it back up off me.
If they had have just asked you what was going on for you in the beginning when you mentioned redundancy, and things like that, and being pregnant, so all of those things start sparking off for me.
Yeah.
As I haven't dealt with people with postnatal, that would spark things off for me.
Yeah,
look out for this person. What's going on? Because absolutely, they've got pressure. Because, and you would have, not only do you made redundant, but you're down to one income.
Yeah,
potentially.
Exactly.
And you're not going to get another job easily because you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And I mean, gosh, those things are really, I would hope today that they're a bit better with it.
Well, actually, this is the thing. Like I said, with pregnancy, there is no prevention. So even though we know the risk factors, there is no one actually, it is possible to prevent illness from occurring. And it is possible to get help very quickly so that mother recovers very quickly. The consequences of her depression don't have to go that far. I think mothers, basically what we're doing, Mothers Helpers is doing, is filling that gap. Where there is a gap, we're putting up our hand and saying, hey, we're gonna do something here. So basically, just to explain what we offer, we have a criteria of anyone who is pregnant or anyone with a child under the age of two who has got any risk factor or diagnosed postnatal or antenatal depression or anxiety. They will meet our criteria and we will work with them. And what we're offering here on Waiheke Island is an initial assessment for an hour with a registered nurse. We'll assess their depression. We will talk about their story. We'll listen to what's going on for them. We'll make referrals to a range of services that can, what we call a wraparound service. Because it's very hard to ask for help. And then once you have asked for help, you don't want to keep asking for help. It's a very hard thing to do when you have an expectation on yourself as a mother to have it all together. So you beat yourself up for asking for help. So we just want her to do it once. And from there, we will actually put in a peer support worker who was voluntary, who will come in once a month and actually just support her and coach her, work on some goals, work on some priorities of some things that we know will help her to recover.
And the research shows that peer support has an enormous benefit.
Yeah.
It's in dealing with mental health now, there's a lot of peer support workers. There's a lot of peer support people who help people. Someone who knows what you're going through. Mm. You don't have to explain it and feel like that you're an idiot because you sort of explain your life away.
Yeah.
That's very powerful. I'm really, it's wonderful to hear that because that's the powerfulness of having someone who you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a friend who's been through what I've been through. And we can talk, and I know he knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear that. Now, is that going to be available in Waiheke?
It's going to be available in Waiheke. We've got a launch. Just to add as well, the other thing that we do is we bring in volunteers that offer childcare and housework for someone who doesn't have family support.
And that's vital because a lot of people have a mother around and aunties or someone, and that can be a big help. But if you've got literally nobody and suddenly you're a solo mum, which you never expected to be, and all of a sudden you've got all this on your plate. Oh, that's wonderful.
And they don't have to be a single mum.
No.
It can be anybody who doesn't have that support because if your husband's working or whatever the case may be. So we'll offer that because, you know, that means that mother can go and have counselling or that mother can go and have a sleep. And sleep is crucial.
I remember babysitting a baby once so the mother could go and have her hair done.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't even able to do that.
Yeah.
She came back and she felt really great. That actually was at work.
Yeah.
The boss is sitting at the computer nursing the baby.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in those first few weeks, you're doing well if you get a shower.
Yeah.
So it's really, really tough, you know, in those first few weeks. But, you know, for someone with postnatal depression, they need that break. They need to have that regular
break. How do they get in touch with you?
So the best way to get in touch with us is through the website, mothershelpers.co.nz. But I really want to just mention our launch. We have a launch event that's coming up on Friday the 13th of September. It's at 7 o'clock. Doors are opening at 7 o'clock. We've got free food, free nibbles, free wine, and free entertainment. We've got some Jamie Stone playing for us, and it's an Onitangi Hall, and we've got chandeliers being donated to us, and we're going to decorate the hall and have it really lovely. So it'll be a really nice event.
And what time's that?
It's at 7 o'clock on Friday the 13th, Onitangi Hall.
Right.
We need RSVPs, so if you can please RSVP to me, which is 372 9840 or info@mothershelpers.co.nz. And we're really, I mean, apart from anyone who's interested, you know, health professionals, anyone who might refer a mother to our service, we're also looking for volunteers who might want to work with us as a peer support worker or in what we call an in-home volunteer doing childcare and housework. So,
And there's no charge for this?
No charge.
No charge?
Nope.
So entertainment and some food?
Yeah.
Meeting with people?
Yeah.
Being able to help?
Opportunity to help, or just to find out what we're doing.
Yeah, just find out what's happening. That's wonderful.
We'd love it if everyone would support us with this launch, just to get around us and support us with that by coming along.
Well, I've got the out of the blue Facebook page. So I'll put all that on there. That'll be great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. Just one thing I was going to ask you. How are you finding Island Life?
Island Life, presenting on Island Life, yeah, it surprised me actually, because one of the things I like to do on Island Life is talk about cool stuff that's going around the island, so really positive things that people are doing, amazing things that people are doing, and I like to draw attention to social issues, because those are the things that I'm, and you know, yes, I throw in a bit of political stuff now and then, but it surprised me, I have to say, because I really, really enjoy it. I really enjoy meeting people and talking to people. And there are just, especially the people that I'm talking to, that I choose to talk to, I think they're just such amazing people, and it's a joy to talk to them.
It's a lot of fun being on radio.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there could be as many as they like, 5 Saturdays in a month. I'm quite happy to do it. Well, thank you very much for coming in. I'll put this on the Facebook page for Out of the Blue. This needs to be really advertised. It's a wonderful service. I've always felt very sorry. I've worked with some people, because I've worked in peer support for mental health, and I've worked with some women who have suffered from postnatal depression, and their stories, it's really sad.
Mm.
But if you can get that support and someone you can talk to, someone you can lean on, someone will just let you get out and do something,
mm.
go meet a friend you haven't been able to see, I'm sure would make an enormous difference.
Thank you so much,
well,
David.
Thank you.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
Good morning. How is everyone?
Good morning.
You're great.
Right. Now, you've come in this morning to talk about ASSIST.
We have.
And the program. What is ASSIST all about? He says...
I'm going to hand over to Lisa to answer this question. This is Lisa Smith, who's from the Piritahi Holder and also from Living Without Violence, Waiheke. And she's done the course, so she's the best person to speak about the content and how valuable it is.
Kia ora. Thanks, Amelia. Good morning, everyone. So my experience of the ASSIST course is that it's like... first aid for suicide prevention, and what it does is it actually helps lower barriers. If someone has suicidal thoughts, most of the time they will tell somebody. And so what this training helps people to do is actually ask the question, ask someone, are you having thoughts about committing suicide? Do you have a plan? And then it steps you through how you respond and then how you refer them on to get help. You're not there to take responsibility for their actions. You're simply there to help guide them to find somewhere to get support and help for themselves. And that's the really valuable thing, because when I notice that suicide, when you bring the topic up, people tend to get fearful because they don't understand it or they don't have any tools or strategies on how to cope with it. So this particular course helps to give you those tools and actually be of assistance and to help people find that support that they may need. It is absolutely invaluable. Anybody can do it, and you get this little handout that you carry around in your wallet just in case. Now, I did this course approximately 3 or 4 years ago, and I still have...
Somewhere in her wallet, scratching around desperately to try and find.
I still have the form in my wallet that just reminds me and helps step me through. So they actually write on their card suicide first aid. And yes, I really highly recommend it.
Cool.
Excellent. So how long does this course last? Is it day or?
It's 2 full days. We've sort of straddled the weekday weekend divide because we didn't want people who work during the week to miss out, but we also didn't want people to have to give up their whole weekends. So it's a Friday and a Saturday, the 20th and the 21st of September. It's a full day, and it's being held at the Waiheke Adult Learning Centre, which is previously Adult Literacy up in Donald Bruce Road. We've managed to get funding, which has just been so fantastic. New Hope Shop and the Auckland District Health Board have actually provided all the money, because it was going to cost a good cool $6,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, very expensive.
So we can basically run this for free. We can offer this for free to the Waiheke community for the $25 registration fee, which is...
It's just $25.
$25, yep.
That's amazing. Yep. To get funding for it. It's so hard to get funding for any... Well,
it is.
You know, with the budgeting service, yeah, trying to get funding for anything, yeah, is not simple.
It's not. But, yeah. I mean, New Hope are incredible. Yeah. They really
are.
Yes,
they are.
They just, you know, they see the worth of these community initiatives and they really... come to the party.
So. They've donated an enormous amount of money to the community. Mm. I was reading how much they donated in a year.
Yeah.
It was incredible.
There are so many
money.
Things that have been happening over the last year or so that wouldn't be possible without their giftings.
So who actually runs? Are you actually running the course?
No,
or is it run by somebody else?
It's Lifeline New Zealand, and they come over. They send a facilitator over. I think there's a couple, actually, because it's such an intense course, isn't it?
Yes.
So, we introduce them and off they go. So we're literally just arranging it. We're not actually responsible for any of the content or any of the delivery.
So, right, and so it's 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
And it's run by people who know what's going on about things.
Yeah.
What's the big advantage of going to this course?
I think it takes away the fear of asking someone the question, recognising so when someone's behaviour departs from their normal baseline, recognising what's happening for them and asking and then responding and then referring them on.
Yeah.
That's what it does. It gets rid of that fear.
Because as I said with the earlier guest, I work in mental health and there's a fear of asking.
Mm.
Interesting, research says asking or talking about it doesn't cause it.
Mm.
It's the not talking about it that can be the problem. But it is a difficult situation for people, particularly people who are lay people.
Mm.
And so this course gives them the kind of tools that they can, so they know they can ask.
Yeah. It really helps break down those barriers. And it's information. And so the more information that you have, the more empowered you feel. And it just, you know, gets rid of those fears and barriers that we sometimes have with situations and delicate subjects like this.
Yeah, hiding it actually has not worked.
Well, that's a whole other conversation, because I fully agree that the strategies that are currently in place for dealing with suicide and the education of it clearly haven't worked, because we are in the top 5 of the OECD countries for suicide rates. Yeah.
It's scary. It is. The actual rates have remained stubbornly the same. The coroner called it stubborn statistics. They're just staying. Yeah. There has been a little bit of reduction in Maori men. That was always very high. But really, the statistics have stayed pretty stubbornly up there, over 500 a year. It's a lot of people.
It is.
Yeah, and it's really, really sad. And people come to such a shock. And people don't know what to look for. And they just don't know what the behaviour is. I mean, a person could just be slightly different. And if you were trained, you would know.
And that's the beauty of the training, because it goes through all those signs to look out for. So when you know someone, and then when they start to change or they start to depart from their normal behaviour, and just picking them up and recognising them, and then, you know, just mentioning it to them even.
Mm.
Because most people that commit suicide tell someone.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And if they don't, they want to.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking for that.
If somebody asks, yeah. It's not necessary they will go and tell someone, but it's that if asked, they usually do respond to it.
Yes.
And you can get a bit stuck with, I didn't see any signs, or they didn't tell me. But they won't tell you necessarily. But if you can see signs and you ask, it seems the research is very few people actually deny that it's going on, they will come out and say something.
And the other thing I think that's really important about this course is that my experience of people that have been in contact with someone who has completed a suicide, they then go into the guilt factor, and that has detrimental effects on them and their well-being. So a training like this will at least help diminish that, oh my God, I could have done something. What could I have done? It's my fault, the self-guilt and the self-blame.
Why didn't I ask?
Yes, why didn't I ask?
Well, I know that because my own brother, when I was quite young, took his life. And I was in my 20s. I didn't live in Auckland. And I did that. Why didn't I know? Why didn't I ask? And, you know, people just said, well, he didn't want you to know, so he didn't tell you. But I wasn't around to ask anyway, because I know, and he was going on with his life. And we suddenly found there were a whole lot of problems. But, you know, even now I think, well, I might have seen.
Yeah.
But I went through the guilt. But I don't now, but I did then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a terrible shock, and there was nothing. I mean, I'm not young, and 20s would be 66, 65. There was nothing for anybody.
Yeah.
You just had to get on with life.
Yeah.
I don't know how my parents coped. I really don't.
Yeah.
Okay, well, one of our guests is going. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Thank
you,
David. We've got the details. How can they get in? How can they get?
They can ring me at the budgeting service on 372-6300 for registration. Right. I've got all the forms, and I just send them through to Lifeline.
Oh, excellent.
And we give them the account number for YCOS, and they just deposit their $25 and off we go.
I'm really pleased, because it is a difficult one, and it's I mean, even I've known on the times on the air I've been asked to talk about it, and I've gone, gosh, I'm not sure, because it's such a taboo subject.
Incredibly difficult to talk about. And going back to that whole, you know, I didn't ask sort of guilt response. It is hard to ask somebody, are you all right? Yeah. Are you thinking about, I mean, it's, you know, you're potentially going to cause huge offence, huge upset, but, you know, that's way better than losing someone.
I think that, you know, that's a risk that's worth taking.
Oh, absolutely.
And if, you know, if the person knows that you care about them, then they know why you're doing
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Related to this subject, actually, there's a support group called Piri Poho.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, and I thought I'd just mention that too.
Yep, go ahead.
It's Piri Poho means consolation, and it's essentially just a support group. It's not counselling. It's not formal. There's no process involved. It's just a coming together of people who have been affected by suicide in any way. And a critical point there is it doesn't have to have been in the last year, 2 years, 3 years. It could have been 10, 15 years ago, because, you know, there hasn't been a lot of support systems around suicide in the past. I mean, it's a fairly new area that, you know, people that things are coming together, trainings and support groups and whatnot. So, you know, there's a lot of probably a lot of retrospective and historical hurt in a lot of people. And so this group is for anyone who's experienced suicide on any level at any time in their life, to come together and to talk. And that's a monthly meeting, the first Saturday of each month from 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock in the morning. And that's down at the Kohanga building at Piritahi. And if you need more information about that, you can call Tina Saylor on 372-9061. She's the coordinator, if you like.
Yeah, I've seen notices about it up. Is it at the doctor's or somewhere? I've seen it somewhere anyway. I've seen them around. Saw it at the community notice board outside Citizens Advice Bureau.
That'd be right.
That's where I've seen it.
It's a fairly new group, and they're just really sort of finding their feet. But they've got had some great response, and people are starting to come.
Well, I think it's helpful for people to be able to talk about people who've got some idea and help people move on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want people stuck 10 years later.
Mm.
I mean, I know it may seem impossible that you could move on, but other lives go on.
Absolutely.
It's a very difficult time.
Yeah.
On a more lighter subject, we talked about the budgeting service some months ago.
Yes,
now,
we
how are things going?
Great. Yeah, we're going great guns. We're very busy. The winter's always busy. But we're doing some great sort of project-y things in the peripheral, you know, outside of our core budgeting work. And it's Money Week this week, so we're planning a debate, public debate, for next Saturday at the market, which is we did last year as well. It's great fun, so we're doing that again.
Oh, really?
So yeah, we've got
I think I went to it last. I remember.
Yeah. We've got six locals, vocal locals. We've got Alan Knight from who you know.
Oh, who can?
a young man called Will Ryan, Carol Winstanley. John Stansfield, Bruce Davis Goff,
Talker.
And a young woman called Teresa Ronganui. And our adjudicator is the mighty Eileen Evans. And the moot.
Oh, she'll be. You might have trouble keeping her quiet too.
Well, we have had that conversation. Yeah. Sit on your mouth, Eileen.
Yeah.
And the moot is a quote by Theodore Roosevelt, which goes that no man should ever receive a dollar unless that dollar has been fairly earned.
Oh.
So there's a whole lot of interpretations that you can draw from that statement. So that's next week at the market at midday. If it's raining, it'll be in the RSA.
Excellent. Yeah. In the RSA if it's raining, because you can't use the other hall, can you? Because that's used up by
market.
All of the things.
Yeah.
Oh, that's excellent. That's a lot of fun,
it is
those.
A lot of fun. And last year it was great.
Yeah, I've done a few of those myself.
Oh, might have to get you for next year.
Oh, it's always a bit of fun. People say my tongue's hinged in the middle and it flaps at both ends.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah. No, it just gives people a boost. And,
well, the whole idea of
hopefully you'll be shaking out some boxes to try and get some money.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Maybe, yeah.
No, do it.
But the idea
see
of Money Week
grab
is just
some money.
To really get people to talk about money, because people are reticent about discussing their finances. And it's not, it's about getting people to actually have conversations about money and look at their own financial situation. The other event that we're running is a financial literacy symposium for youth, and that's today actually at the library, 4:30. And that's basically geared towards teenagers who are finishing up school and moving out into the world, and we're just going to talk to them about credit cards, credit contracts, consumer rights, you know, how to avoid debt.
I remember you told me how long it took to pay off $6,000 on a credit card. It is stunning.
It is.
And I think people actually, if they're honest, have more difficulty than they admit to.
Mm.
I'm sure that people have a lot more problems with managing their money than
they do.
And it's the credit card. I mean, that's just the
people
the stories you hear.
Four.
All I know, and they have $10,000.
But that's sort of normal, so they don't see it as a real issue. If they've got a good income, you know, they can pay that off.
But they don't have a good income.
But often they don't. That's the thing. And especially and if then their good income disappears because they lose their job or something happens. Yeah, credit cards are just a real.
It's a real temptation too when they write to you and say, "Oh, would you like some more?"
Yep.
Because they obviously think I'm all right. They're giving it to me. And it's I just tell them not to ask me. I don't want to know because it's just so you can get caught. I think everyone has a little story. I think
so.
About when you put a bit too much on a credit card and
I've never had one. Actually, I'm such a paragon.
You're an absolute paragon of virtue.
No, for some reason it's just never. My husband had one, so I suppose in some ways I had one, but. I really want to, I mean, that's the whole point of getting to the young people is to really forewarn and forearm them against these offers because they come in as soon as they turn 18.
That's what happened with the student loans. I know a couple who got a student loan and they went, in those days you could get them easily, they went off to Fiji. And then another bought a car. And the father took it back. But that's what they were using it for.
Absolutely.
I don't think you can do that now.
No, you can't.
But you could in the very beginning.
That was my day. It was so irresponsible, that policy. You could literally ring up, I'll have the whole amount in my bank tomorrow, thanks. And there would be $7,000 if you're a full-time
student.
And
they went and bought a car.
Yep. And then they drop out.
The father took it back, got the money and made them pay it off.
Yeah.
But, you know, these people went off on a holiday to Fiji.
Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful.
I had lots of friends who did that. And then they'd drop out of university and wouldn't even end up graduating. And they'd have this huge millstone around their neck.
And it takes a lot to pay it off.
Yeah.
That I've never seen the video, whatever you've got, about the $6,000, but it stuck in my brain about the number of times I've quoted that to people.
It's It's fascinating. We're going to be showing that to the kids tonight.
Oh, good. Yeah. It's powerful.
It is incredibly powerful. Yeah, it sets it out how...
It's such a long time.
You are literally crippling yourself when you have that much debt.
So. And the youngsters get a chance. Oh, I can buy new shoes. Mm. I can buy this or I can buy that.
And they can get things always on get paid. Credit contracts. Once you're 18, you don't have to have your parents' permission to enter into credit contracts. And again, I mean, if you don't read the small fine print, and there's a hell of a lot of it, and it's really small, you probably need a microscope to read it, you can get yourself really in trouble.
And the the interest rates are 20, you know, I mean, you're not paying
pretty
much off, are you?
They can choose their interest rate, these credit companies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're not paying much off, are you, really? No. Yeah. Well, thank you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And so if they want to do that course, that 2-day course, they can ring you at...
They can ring me at the Waiheke Budgeting Services on 372-6300. The course is September the 20th and the 21st, which is a Friday and a Saturday. $25 registration fee is all you'll pay. So call me and I've got the registration forms. I can take your details over the phone and then I just fax it through to Lifeline.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you
That's
for having
been
me.
Really great to great. See you again.
Okay,
and thanks. at the market next Saturday
at midday, and at the library this afternoon, if you've got any errant teenagers that you want to bully into financial health, send them along at 4:00.
Yeah, I think we all need to be bullied into it, quite frankly. Okay.
Thank you
very much,
thanks.
Amelia. Right, that was Amelia. So that's great. So the budgeting service does a great, great job.
Waiheke Radio.
Well, our guest John Mewson has come in, and John and I are going to talk about community sheds. Good morning, John. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Now, this comes from the idea of men's sheds, isn't it?
That's the philosophy, if you like, that it's built on. I'll just get the microphone in the right place. Now perhaps people can hear me. Yes, the philosophy is, the backdrop really, is men's sheds, which is basically about older men getting together, because quite often it is said they don't network that well. And it was originally thought that we'd work on a men's shed for Waiheke, but we had our very first meeting and said, no, we want it to be for everybody, so hence it's being called a community shed, and we hope that in due course it will be used by everybody.
I think it's a great idea as I was saying to you before we came on air, I was brought up by a father who was a fabulous gardener. He was wonderful with children. Born in 1900, really quite a different, loved cooking, loved poetry, loved music, could sing in music hall, wouldn't know what to do with a piece of timber, had no idea about cars, and I've inherited all of that. I've inherited a lot of the good ones, but, you know, in New Zealand, sort of, you feel like if you can't use a bit of wood, you're not a real man.
That's right. Well, and I dare say for others, it might be something else that they can't do. But hopefully we'll be, you know, we've got some wonderful artisans on this island, of course, lots and lots of artists and other skilled people. So in terms of sharing knowledge and skills and practice, because often it's the practice that makes the difference, this shed will hopefully provide a venue where we've got quite a good range of tools and equipment, because it will be able to be shared. We've had a lot of people already talk about how they've got garages full of stuff that they can't get at or want to use anymore or what have you. So I don't think that will be a problem for us. I think we'll be able to do a lot of things, because we'll have a lot of things to do with. And the issue will then become, can we find the right place to do it in?
And that sounds like could be the issue. I had a piece of furniture at home, and I'd got it, and I wanted to sand it back and then do a sort of distressed sort of look with, you know, with the paint and everything, but I had nowhere to do it. So I ended up paying someone to do it for me, and that's okay. It was a good price, but that kind of thing would have suited that project down to the ground. I could have sanded it there, and then I could have painted it. Somebody might have been able to say, hey, you're better if you do it that way.
Absolutely.
So have you got how many people did you have at the first meeting?
I think there was about 8 of us. There's about a group of 10 so far, only men, that have been talking about inaugurating this. But in talking to people about it, some women are coming forward, and I'm hoping that we'll have a meeting at 2:00 today where some of them will come along. at the Sea Scouts Hall at 2 o'clock.
That's down at the end of Shelley Beach.
Correct, the end of Shelley Beach Road.
Two o'clock today. I'm glad I got you on because I could see that I saw this in the local paper. And I thought, oh, I'll get. And of course, I pass at a coffee bar someone whose name I've completely forgotten, and I see him every morning.
Ah. Oh, I can't help you with that one.
Ah, and he was the one I gave the message to that got through to you.
Was it Richard Postel?
Richard Postel, that's the one.
He's a near neighbour of mine. Yep. We're working together also on something called Boys in Schools.
Yes, that's a very interesting. I must get Richard on when I'm next doing it to talk to him because I've had a few meetings with him about that. He's got quite a big garage, if I remember rightly, that he works in.
He does. Yeah. So just to go back to where you were with the no room in your shed, a lot of people on this island do have reasonable sheds and garages and so forth, but it's more about the range of equipment that they would need to make a variety of things. And we're looking to do quite a bit of stuff that actually makes things like toys and repairs things for older people, brings in younger men and women who will be able to share the knowledge and some of the gossip and the life experiences of older folk. And that sort of thing. So I hope it is a real, genuine community shed where it's a win-win for all concerned.
I think it's a great idea because some older people have things that they'd like fixed. They don't really want to go to somebody. They're afraid what it'll cost. They don't know who to talk to. And there's not many people who'll fix little things.
Correct.
Now.
That's right.
Because people are pretty busy, but that'd be nice if that. If you had something like that. Now, have you any idea of where that could be?
And by where do you mean?
Where could the shed be? Have you any?
Oh, not yet, no. And I don't want to get into that yet because I think we first need to set up the organisation as a proper incorporated society, properly have members and so forth, so that when we go to people for funds and grants and possibly the council for accommodation and so forth, we've got a proper entity that they can deal with.
And so are you any way connected with the men's sheds movement?
Not yet, because we aren't yet until we incorporate. But when we do, and despite the fact that it's a community shed rather than a men's shed, they have got lots of things they can help with. For instance, insurance policies that they buy into for the whole movement. Lots of advice and technical manuals and all sorts of aids that will help us to operate, rules that we need to operate by, although we will look at a constitution at 2 o'clock today. But they can always be improved. Things around membership are quite important that we get right because there will be machinery and all sorts of things. So we need to get safety and all those sorts of things sorted out. So the Men's Sheds Association is a very rich vein to tap for a lot of information that we'll need to make the operation run smoothly.
Oh, excellent. Because, you know, there's no way you're going to get funding unless you register with the Charities Commission and have all those things.
All of that,
people
yes.
won't even look at you these days. They used to, but now they really do want all of that because once you've gone through the Charities Commission, you're recognised as a charitable trust because they decide whether you are or not, and then that means that you get tax-free. You don't have to pay.
Correct.
I got to pay GST, but yeah, I've been through quite a few of those in my time. So
me too. And yeah. I must acknowledge here Ron Walden, one of the island's long-standing
he's
residents.
He's been around a while.
Who,
yeah.
Yes, who's a lawyer, of course, and he's been helping on that sort of technical rule stuff.
Yeah.
So thank you, Ron.
You do got to get that that background for. But that sounds. I mean, I did Google men's sheds, the great Google. What will we do without
yes,
it today?
Indeed. How did we live without it?
Yeah, I know. When I do my jazz program, people say, "You know a lot about music, don't you?" And I go, "Oh yes, it's Mr. Google that does the answers."
Right.
So you're working today to sort of set up the structure. That's 2 o'clock,
correct.
Sea Scouts Hall in Shelley Beach Road.
Correct.
Right.
And we need 15 to 20 people there in order to have enough names on the application for incorporated society status.
Yep.
So I think we're fairly safe we'll get that number, but we'd be really wrapped if we got 40 people.
Yeah, and have you got people already saying, oh, I've got this
yes,
machine,
absolutely.
I've got that machine?
Yes, yeah. Some older folks who will not use their stuff again. Some people who are already boaties and so forth that do a lot of work on boats. That are part of our group that, you know, that we should end up with equipment is probably going to be the least of our problems.
Yeah, it sounds like it probably would be. And also it could be quite good for a person to pop pop around, and just if they've got they're older and they don't really want to work with machinery, come around and have a cup of tea.
Absolutely.
And just look.
Absolutely.
And talk. Because there's a lot of knowledge that we just don't tap into.
Right. And wouldn't it be lovely if young people came too so that they could talk to those same people?
Oh, you find out things.
Yes.
But it's just nice because it can be quite, you know, working in mental health, and I've done some work in older mental health. That's like the gold, super gold card's a wonderful thing to get people out.
Yes.
A shed like that where perhaps a person could come along and share some experience gives them something they can go and do.
Right, at any time that suits them.
Yeah, well, that's great, John. Thank you very, very much. I really appreciate you coming in. And so that's at the Scouts Hall, Sea Scouts Hall.
Shelley Beach Road.
2 o'clock.
Today.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
No, Dave. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the air.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirowa.